Chapter 56. The income of the household and expenses. In the management of a house, the most vital aspect is the control of the purse strings. Any sensible household would keep track of their regular income and expenditure. As it is said, they cut the coat according to the length of the cloth available. They make efforts to keep their expenses within the amount of inflow of cash into the family's account. Every family should know their priorities and allocate money to different items of expense on that basis. Careful families always try that they don't fall into debt trap. They will thus avoid unnecessary worries coming their way. Even if their economic condition is bad for a time, they plan and overcome these difficulties in some time. They avoid reducing themselves to the status of penury through proper management of their limited resources. Contrary to this, the families that are careless about proper management of their expenses, who are extravagant and continue living beyond their means, fall into the habit of compulsive borrowing. To meet the bills for their expenses, they are forced even to borrow money at high rates of interest. Since they are compulsive borrowers, they don't mind buying expensive things on credit. Such families are never free of worries. They come to such a pass that sometimes they are not able to buy the basic necessities of day-to-day living. Such things happen even to families whose incomes are reasonably sound. They will be in their straitened circumstances because of not having a proper plan for expenditure. These people are the victims of false pomp and show. The welfare of the family depends not only on earning and bringing some money home, but it also requires proper budgeting and control of the expenses. Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq, peace be upon him, says, "When Allah wants a family to prosper, then He gives them the capability of wisdom and order in life. All excellence is assembled in three things. One of them is making use of understanding and prudence in managing their finances. Extravagance becomes the cause of poverty and penury, and moderation in life provides contentment and comfort." Imam Ali, peace be upon him, the commander of the faithful, says, "With thrift, half the requirements can be met. There are three signs of an extravagant person. He wants to eat what he has not. He buys the thing for which he has no money. He wears the dress which he doesn't afford to buy." To streamline the financial affairs of the family, it is essential that the husband and wife should have similarity of views. If the husband or the wife spends without keeping in mind the priorities, then the management of the house will go haywire. Secondly, even the children should have some understanding of the needs and priorities. If the children become thoughtlessly extravagant and the parents, out of their love, humor them and permit their spending sprees, the family can come into financial problems at some stage. The parents should inform the children the financial status of the family and discuss the budget in their presence. This will give them an understanding of the importance of thrift in spending. They should also know that the management of a house is not all bed of roses. It is essential that the children should, in stages, be made acquainted with the household chores and also the income of the family. They should know that the house runs on the income of the parents and they have no other means besides that. They should understand that all the needs of the house have to be met from that money only. They should also be told that expenditure on certain matters have to be given priority over others. For example, the household expenses, the house rent, the bill for amenities like power and water, etc. In first instance, the expenses on necessities have to be met. Then the other requirements can follow. The children need to understand and extend their cooperation to the parents in this matter. From the very childhood, the children should be trained to match their needs and demands to the means of the family. They must be stopped from wasteful expense and thoughtless purchasing. They must be introduced to the habit of thrift, and they should consider themselves as members of the family who have to spend within the means of the family. They should not get a false notion that they are from a rich family, and they can spend as they wish. They must be trained to control their wishes in the interest of the essential expenses of the family that cannot be avoided or postponed. These children, when they grow up, will have the reins of the society in their hands. Therefore, they must be groomed into the habit of thrift from the very childhood. However comfortable the financial status of the parents, the children must be taught to spend money carefully and judiciously. They should explain to the children that all men belong to one family of human beings. Therefore, the fortunate ones who are rich should give help to the poor. If the income of the family is insufficient, they must prune their daily expenses and try to make the ends meet within their meager resources. The parents should not complain to their children about the financial straits they are in. They should instead of this give the lesson of patience and trust on Allah. Prepare them to face the odds in their future life with courage and equanimity. When a child is capable of working, initiate him into work and give him the moral support. They must tell to the child that if he starts working, his wages will supplement the family's income and they will thus be more comfortable. The child must be encouraged to give a portion of his earnings for the household expenses. This way he will appreciate his responsibility for the family. A young earning member of the family should draw his pocket money from his wages, keeping in mind the requirements of the household expenses. Chapter 57. Respect for the law. People in a civilized society cannot live without law. Where the law of the jungle prevails, that is not a civilized society. To run the administration of a society, very well-defined laws are absolutely essential. These laws are for upholding order and providing protection to the aggrieved and dispensing punishment to the guilty. For the comfort and safety of the populace, laws are absolutely necessary. In the countries where there is good understanding between the people and the lawmakers, the laws are made for the benefit of the people and they therefore respect the laws. There can be general well-being if the people in a country are law-abiding. In countries where the lawmakers work with ulterior selfish motives, and while framing the statute they don't have the welfare of the people in mind, the people stop honoring the law, and there can be unrest in such societies. Unfortunately, earlier our country faced a similar situation. Here the author means Iran of the Shah's period. Most of the laws were neither Islamic nor good for the people. The laws were formulated keeping in mind the ruling clique and the wishes of the imperialists and their stooges. No attention was given to the plight of the worker, the toiler and the deprived populace. The lawmakers tried to hoodwink the people with oppressive and repressive laws to subjugate the masses. But since the people of Iran felt that those un-Islamic statutes were against their interests, they had no respect for them. However, there were some laws in that statute that were good for the people. But since the legal system was anti-people in totality, they rejected the complete system. Respect for legitimate and people-friendly laws is essential, and the parents have to explain about them to the children. When a child finds the parents crossing the road from the zebra crossing only, he feels that he must do likewise. He gets into the habit of following this rule of safety and may never transgress it. The parents must tell the children that the cars and other fast-moving vehicles have the right of way on the roads and the pedestrians can only use the zebra crossings when they require to cross to the other side of the road. Pedestrians trespassing on the roads commit an offense and also are exposed to the risk of accidents. When the child understands the advantage of abiding by the law, he becomes a good citizen. Imam Ali, peace be upon him, the commander of the faithful, says, "Habits are second nature." Chapter 58. Respect. It is always the wish of the parents that their children are well behaved. Good and polite children are a source of pride for every parent. The well-behaved children politely greet the person they visit, shake hands with him, inquire about his health, converse softly, limit the conversation to what is asked of them, and say proper adieus when departing from the host's place. Such children give due respect to the elders. When elders arrive, they politely stand up, show deference to the scholars, religious figures, and generally respect pious and good persons. In a gathering they remain cool and collected, don't talk loudly, thank the person who gives them something, don't interrupt others, particularly the elders, during conversations. They say Bismillah, In the name of Allah the Beneficent the Merciful, the Islamic grace, before starting to eat, they take small morsels of food, don't eat excessively, don't throw food on the table or the floor and follow all the required table manners. They take care of their dresses that they don't get stained and try to remain clean and tidy. They will be considerate to the others and never hurt others' feelings. They walk with a decent gait and give the impression of being obedient and decent children. They don't ridicule others with practical jokes, and when someone speaks to them, they listen with rapt attention. It is not only the parents who like polite children, but they are popular with all who happen to interact with them. Impertinent and impolite children are abhorred by all. The Commander of the Faithful, Ali, peace be upon him, says, "Respectability is the zenith of humanity. Respect, politeness, in a man is like pretty raiment. Good behavior, politeness, is required by people more than silver or gold. There is no better embellishment than politeness in a man. The best inheritance a father can give to his son is to train him to be of polite. An impolite person will have more failings." Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq, peace be upon him, says, "Allow your child to play till the 7 years of age, then teach him good manners and politeness." The Holy Prophet Muhammad of Islam, peace be upon him and his progeny, said, "The child has three rights over its parents. 1. They select a good name for him or her. 2. Make him or her respectful, polite. 3. Arrange a good spouse for him or her." The fondest hope of every parent will be that their children grow into polite and respectable persons. But this hope cannot be fulfilled without sincere and continued efforts. It will not be possible to infuse this trait in the children with sermonizing. The best route to this end is setting ideal example before the children by the parents with their exemplary behavior in their daily lives. Imam Ali, peace be upon him, has said, "Best behavior is that which you yourself. Start instruction with oneself and then teach others. First make your character perfect and then sermon and advise others. Children are natural mimics. The capability to copy is very strong in their nature. The children imitate the ways of their parents and others around them. He will talk like them and he would try to walk like them." Instruction, of course, is a very important aspect of training, but it is not as strong as the capacity to mimic and learn, particularly in the early stages of childhood. The parents, who are particular that their children should be polite and well-behaved, must take special care to see that they are training them by personal examples. If the parents are polite to one another, naturally the children will follow suit. The parents who themselves are devoid of politeness and good manners should not expect good manners from their children. They might lecture the children hundreds of times on the norms of good behavior and politeness, but the children would be behaving under the experience of the attitude of the parents and others in the household. If the parents are impolite and abusive to each other, they will be setting a negative example to their growing children. Children from such homes will be as bad-mannered as the parents or, perhaps, more so. Any attempt at correcting them will fall on deaf ears. They will naturally think that the parents are asking them to do what they themselves don't practice. Example is always better than precept. But it is not right to think that lecturing will be totally ineffective. Good parents, who also set good example for their children, can always talk to them about the norms of good conduct and they will definitely accept their advice. This advice too has to be given with politeness. There are parents who express their anger rather harshly when they notice the children doing something wrong. Sometimes they might say, "You naughty fellow. Why didn't you wish the visitor? Why didn't you say bye to him? Are you dumb? Stupid and mannerless child, why did you spread your legs impolitely in front of elderly visitors? Why were you noisy while visiting our friend's home? You beast! Why do you impolitely interrupt the conversation?" These ignorant parents think that they are correcting their children with such talk. They don't know that good manners are not taught with bad manners. If the child is guilty of any indiscretion, he must be politely cautioned. There should not be others present at such sessions that should be conducted in a cool and friendly manner. The Prophet Muhammad of Islam, peace be upon him and his progeny, used to greet the children and say, "I greet the children," so that greeting becomes their habit. Chapter 59. Theft and Kleptomania. Several times it happens that a child spreads its hand to take something that is not his. He forcibly tries to take the eatables, fruits or toys of some other child. Stealthily takes away something from the pocket of the father or from the mother's purse. He takes sweets and other goodies from the pantry without the knowledge of his mother. Picks up things stealthily from the shops visited by the family. Takes pencils, rubber, etc. of his siblings and schoolmates without informing them. Several children do this sort of things in their childhood. Seldom a person can be found who has never done such things in his childhood. Some parents are very upset finding their children doing such things and start imagining of a bleak future for the child. They feel that their child might turn into a thief or burglar when he grows up. With these pangs of remorse, they keep worrying themselves. First of all, such parents should give their attention to the fact that they need not worry too much and feel sorry for the small aberration in the child. Lifting insignificantly small things by the child is not the sign that the child will turn into a thief in the future. They should know the child has not yet reached the stage to appreciate the rights of ownership of others, or to differentiate between what belongs to others and what is his own. The child has subtly strong feelings and jumps to grab whatever attracts his attention. The child will not be naughty by nature, but this attitude comes to him from outside influences. These are all passing phenomena in his early life. When he grows up, he might not do such things. There must be many pious, upright persons who might have done some unintentional stealing in their childhood. But the purpose of telling all this is not that the parents totally ignore reacting to the acts of theft of their children. I only wish to dispel their fears that the children might turn into thieves. Instead of lamenting over such incidents, they should discreetly try to correct the child. A child of 2 to 3 years in particular is not able to distinguish between what belongs to him and what is not his. Whatever comes in his reach, he tries to take. Whatever is attractive to him, he wants to have. At this stage, shouting at the child and beating him will not be of any use. The best attitude for the parents will be to practically stop the child from doing such a thing if it happens in their presence. If the child tries to snatch something from another child, they should softly intervene. And despite all this, if the child takes the thing from the other child, the parents should restore it to the real owner as soon as they can. The things that they don't want the child to handle, they should take care to keep them out of his reach. When the children reach a certain level of intelligence, they will start understanding about ownership of things. Now they will not try to grab others' things. However, some children do continue the habit of stealing even after attaining the idea about ownership of things. In such a situation, the parents should not remain silent spectators. They should not be complacent now, thinking that the child will automatically give up the habit. He might turn into a thief, or at least a kleptomaniac, who picks up things of others just for the heck of it, not knowing what he is doing. It is not right to ignore even if the child steals something belonging to his own parents. Some parents are so protective of their children that if someone reports that the child has stolen their things, they start wrongly defending their child and blaming the other person of false accusation. Such ignorant parents, with their negative attitude, unknowingly encourage the child to blatantly continue his stealing activity. The child will learn to steal and deny having done it. Therefore, the parents should not be unconcerned when they face such a situation. They should make efforts to stop the child from stealing and lying about it. There will be the risk of the bad habit taking root in his nature and making reform very difficult. Imam Ali, peace be upon him, has said, "Giving up habits is very difficult. At the first instance, the parents should try to remove the causes of the child wanting to steal. If the child needs pencil, paper, or eraser, the parents should fulfill this need. If they neglect this need of the child, it is likely that he will pick the things from his classmates. He may even take money from the father's pocket to buy the things. If the child wants a ball to play and the parents refuse to buy one for him, he might forcibly take the ball of a friend forcibly. Or even he might steal a ball from the neighborhood grocer. The parents must take care to fulfill the child's needs to the extent possible. If certain things he wants are beyond their means, they should make the child understand by telling him the facts affectionately. For example, they can tell him that they don't have so much money that they immediately buy for him the color pencil box required urgently. He may borrow the box today from his friend to do his immediate task and they shall get him one later. Tough attitude with the child might encourage him to steal. If the parents are keeping eatables locked in the pantry, the child will plan somehow to search the key and take out the goodies for eating. This thing can happen in the near impossible situation when the parents want to eat the things themselves and deny to the child. When the parents hide away their money, the child might get inclined to search for it. It is better the parents don't hide their cash from the children very much. They must take the children into their confidence and should not give them a feeling that things are being hidden from them. They should teach the child that life is spent with some discipline. There are times for eating, and they should not always keep munching things. Money is for buying necessities and should not be squandered carelessly. Films of crime, theft and robbery should not be shown to the children. Story books and radio programs on such subjects should also be avoided. There are many instances that youth caught for crimes have confessed that they got the inspiration from movies for such acts. The most important thing is that the parents and other members of the family try that the environment of their house is one of honesty and probity where others' ownership of things is respected. No one takes money from the parents' pockets and the things are not appropriated without the knowledge of the owner. Even the husband should not rummage the wardrobe of the wife without her knowledge. The parents also should respect the right of ownership of the children and should not handle their things without their consent. The parents should not insult the child over his minor misdemeanors. They should not shout at him, calling him names like cheat and thief. They should not threaten him that he would go to jail for his act of stealing. With such insults, they cannot reform the child. He might, to the contrary, become stubborn and continue with his stealing. Or, perhaps in a revengeful mood, he might commit bigger thefts. The best method to save the situation for the parents would be to treat the child with discretion, love, and softness. They should explain the grave consequences of stealing. They should convince him to return the stolen things to the owner and never repeat the act again. But even after these attempts of reforming the child fail, then the only alternative will be to talk to him with a strong and forthright manner. Finally, if the child proves totally incorrigible, they can reluctantly have recourse to physical punishment. Chapter 60. Jealousy. Jealousy or envy is a negative trait in human beings. A jealous person always envies others who are happy and comfortable. When he finds something good and attractive with others, he wishes that they lost the thing. Generally, such a jealous person is neither capable of snatching away the good thing from the other person nor harm him in any way. He continues to sulk and brood. He will be burning in the flames of jealousy day and night. An envious person is devoid of the pleasures and comforts of the world, and the feelings of deprivation and the thought of the amenities enjoyed by others makes his own life miserable. The Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, and his progeny of Islam has said, "A jealous person is the unhappiest of his compatriots." Imam Ali, peace be upon him, the commander of the faithful, says, "Envy makes the life of a jealous person bleak. An envious person never gets contentment and happiness. Jealousy has deleterious effects on the nerves and heart of a person and makes him sick and weak. Imam Ali, peace be upon him, the Commander of the Faithful, says, "An envious person is always feeble and debilitated. Jealousy weakens the roots of the person's faith and turns him towards sin and disbelief. Lots of murders, fights and other crimes are the result of envy and jealousy. Sometimes the envious person does backbiting of the person he is jealous of and spreads rumors and inappropriate designations about him. He sometimes causes damage to the properties of the other person." Imam Hamid al-Barqa, peace be upon him, said, "Envy destroys faith in the way fire destroys the fuel. Jealousy is a part of the human nature. There will hardly be any persons who don't have this instinct." The Prophet Muhammad of Islam, peace be upon him and his progeny, says, "There are three things no person is devoid of: base thoughts, bad actions, and jealousy. Therefore, this undesirable instinct must be curbed with all the force at the disposal of a person. It should not be allowed to flourish and grow. If the instinct of envy is allowed to persist, since it is a part of the person's nature, it would grow at leaps and bounds. It will reach such proportions that fighting it out will not be possible. The best time when good manners are cultivated, and the bad ones are eliminated, is the childhood of a person. The element of jealousy too will be present in a child. The parents, with their own behavior, and proper attention to the child, can definitely cure the child of the rudiments of the malady of jealousy that manifest in his behavior now and then. If the parents treat all their children equitably, without any favoritism, the problem of one envying the other doesn't arise. The raiment, the food, and other things in the use of the children should be of the same quality and standard. They should keep in mind equity in the matter of pocket money and general treatment of the children. They should not overtly compare the capabilities of the children in their presence, and even with others, if there is likelihood of the children learning about the comparison being made. Such attitude can curb whatever degree of capability the weaker child has and might render him totally incompetent. These well-meaning but ignorant parents think that they are training the child. To the contrary, they aren't able to fulfill their purpose and are adding fuel to the fire. The innocent child's heart gets the ideas of jealousy and hate. He may get motivated to commit acts of enmity. There can always be the risk of his taking out spleen on his own siblings. The parents should never compare their children with others. They should never praise other children very much, particularly in comparison with their own. It is not proper if the parents tell to their children, "How well behaved, polite and studious is our neighbor's son. How obedient he is, and also he helps his mother with her work. His parents are really lucky to have a son like him." Such parents must understand that this type of comparison might hurt the ego of the child and have harmful implications. The child, instead of mending his ways, may become adamant and revengeful. The parents must strictly avoid comparing children. Some children are always more proficient, better looking or smarter than others. It is possible that the parents may be more attached to one child than the others. There is no harm in this attitude. This is a normal human instinct. But in talk and actions, they should not show any discrimination between the children. They must ensure equitable treatment for all the children. If they desire to give any special treatment to a particular child, they should do it while other children are not around. Even if the parents are taking full care to give equitable treatment to all the children, the element of jealousy, which is instinctive in human nature, will still be present in the children to some extent. Every child wishes to be the darling of the parents, and none other should have this privilege. When he notices the parents expressing affection to the other siblings, he will feel momentary pang of jealousy. The child will slowly understand that he has to share the affection of the parents with the other brothers and sisters. The others too have a right over the parents. The parents, with discreet handling of the situation, can make the child accept the other brothers and sisters and thus prevent him from continuing with his feeling of envy. If you find that your son is envious of his brother or sister for some reason, he bullies them, pinches them, and uses harsh words with them, tries to deprive them of their shares of fruits and sweets, then he needs more of your attention. You should not close your eyes to these activities of the child. You must impress on him that he is growing big and his little brother needs more attention than him. You must tell him that when he was a small kid like his little brother now, he too required and received more attention. Instead of trying to mend his ways strictly, impress on him that the little children are his own brothers and sisters. They too love him. If he didn't love them, who would? He must protect them if someone else tries to hurt them. Allah has given to him such lovely brothers and sisters, for which he must be thankful. In conclusion, it is necessary to mention that maintaining totally equitable treatment to all the children might be utopian. How can the parents treat the son, the daughter, the elder and the younger the same way? The elder children can generally be given more freedom. But the younger ones have to be given more care. The elder ones will get more pocket money. The younger ones require more protection. The sons are generally given more freedom of movement than the daughters. Therefore, keeping in mind the need for equity and freedom, the parents have to adopt different approach for the sons and the daughters. This treatment might give to the children some hard feelings. But if the parents properly explain to them that they have the same affection for all the children, but the norms of behavior for people differ according to the gender and age. Although envy and jealousy are very undesirable traits in the eyes of Islam, and are in fact considered sins, the spirit of competition and rivalry are the components of efforts and struggle for human advancement. The difference between envy and rivalry is that a person becomes a rival of another person to match his achievements and to go ahead of him, but an envious person only feels jealous and is unable to compete and come forward. Rivalry in every field of activity is a healthy phenomenon. The human civilization could have become stagnant without rivalry and competition. One person writes, "I had a sister 2 years elder to me. My parents used to love me more than her. Whatever I desired for, they used to give me. At every opportunity they used to praise me and totally neglected mention of my sister. My sister always used to nag me. Whenever she had a chance, she would beat and pinch me, call me names and break my favorite toys. She never wanted me to be happy for a moment. I used to think why my sister is troubling me so much. What wrong I have done to her. She was very jealous of me and perhaps the partial behavior of the parents was reason for this rancor in her mind. The parents never realized that because of their partiality, my sister would try to take revenge on me. Now that my parents are no more, my sister is very kind with me. She feels very much if I have the slightest discomfort.